It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. Good evening, everybody. I'm Rob Commodore. I am your host. I am also the author of Better Than You Think. And today I have a guest on the show, Tim Rieger from Omaha, Nebraska, the home of Warren Buffett. In fact, Tim just told me an interesting fun fact that he lives just 8 blocks away from Warren Buffett in Omaha, Nebraska. But that's not what this is about today. Tim, how are you today?
I'm great, thanks. How are you doing?
Good, good. So Tim and I are going to have a little conversation about authenticity. Tim, you know, comes from a broken home. He's had a troubled, childhood, he'd say. And he's going to share a little bit about that with us and the struggles he's had over time and how he's maybe overcome or learn to manage him. Is that a better way to say it, Tim?
Yes. Learn to understand myself and how to work with my attributes. Yes.
Well, gosh, before you even go into your story, how do you understand yourself?
So I will say, jumping right into that, I'm part of a very similar network to you, the same network you are, which is the Buffinian Company Network. And so as an adult, when I became a real estate broker, I became part of the Buffini Network. I did their profile and where they told me everything about myself, and it was life-changing. Uh-huh. And to know that my number one attribute is firefighter, I think I was about 25 years old when I learned that. And it was so spot on.
I mean, yeah, and we'll get into that.
I am a firefighter. Yeah. So yeah, it was part of that network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll get into that a little later. I probably should have waited, but it's all good because you said, hey, I want to understand myself. So that was a good way to start it. So, hey, Tim, if you don't mind, share a little bit about this troubled past that's led you to who you are.
Yeah. So I'm 50 now, which is, you know, just to paint a picture. I just turned 50. So when I was a child, growing up in small town Nebraska, there's so much more that I can't fill into here. But I do come from a broken home. I'm the youngest of 4. My parents got divorced early, and childhood was really rough. You know, lots of abuse, extreme mental and physical abuse. When my parents got divorced, I lived with my mother. As you can imagine, that's how it usually worked. Both my parents got remarried quickly. My mother married a man who was extremely physically abusive, mostly towards her, but a little bit towards my siblings. And that was pretty awful. And then after years of separation, my father and my stepmother reappeared. And my new stepmother, I should say. My father reappeared with a new stepmother. Well, after years of physical abuse, my siblings and I ran to be with my dad and this new mom. Well, come to find out she was emotionally abusive at a level that was just, it was pretty awful. So growing up, now my older sister has moved out young. They got pregnant young. They started families young. And, you know, when I was a child, I didn't understand why. But then I learned they were replicating their own families. They were creating their environments. And they all moved on. But I was the youngest, the last one left at home. And I made do. And so I learned to keep the peace. I learned to try to make everybody happy. I learned to try to, when everybody was upset or fighting, my job was not to necessarily be a comedian, which is what some people do, but mine was just to find the common ground and to be the firefighter and put out these fires. Again, I later learned those terms. And so then when I became an adult, now I'm getting on a sidetrack, which I know you're going to cut me out. So I'll stop. So that was just my childhood. So you asked me about my childhood and where that came from. So where should I go from there?
This is your gig, man. So what will happen? So let me ask you. So there was a point in time, obviously you had a troubled childhood. Both your parents get remarried. Your father comes back with a stepmother that you said was equally even more so abusive. Mm-hmm. So all the while now, like how old are you at this point? Can you remember that?
So I went to live with my father and my stepmother as a young teenage boy. So 15, 14, 15, 16. And not only was she extremely emotionally abusive, she had gone through lots of trauma as a child that manifested itself, you know, that was passed on. Yeah. So, you know, she had been homeless. She had been a product of child exploitation, sexual assaults, all sorts of things. So that never happened to me. I'm not saying that. But so she was a very abused woman. So then when it came time for her to be a parent, she was not capable of that. The kind of punishments she would do, like starvation. Actually, to be honest, things I don't want to talk about. So it was just neglect and how she, and so then I learned that if I was happy and polite and sweet and I solved somebody else's problems, that everything worked out for me.
Go ahead. Keep going.
So I kind of dug my way out of a shitty situation as a child by being the people pleaser, by going in, if you needed something, I was going to get it. If you needed whatever it was, I was the person that just kept the room happy, made everybody feel safe. And then being a boy, I don't know. I just took on a role of, oh, I didn't have a dad. Yeah. So my dad was non-existent. So I took on a role of being the dad, even though I was young, and just, you know, making sure that everybody was okay. And so what I mean by that is that, so I would find friends that I could take care of. I got into industries like this, the restaurant industry, or where I could run around and I could take care of people. And I just found myself always just trying to help people. And I was very lost in what I was trying to do as a young adult.
So did you figure that, like, helping people and being the people pleaser, did you do that to be accepted, or did you do that because who you are? Because we're on this course of being authentic. So were you really being Tim Rader when you're trying to make everybody happy, when you're trying to keep the peace?
Well, and that's a very good question. And that's the question of my life, by the way. Am I really being Tim Rader, or am I just trying to keep the peace? So you dove right into that. But no, I would say, so early on, I attracted myself to people. I found myself attracted to people that were a hot mess, because then I could help solve their problems, or I'd help keep their peace. And then they would like me because I would keep their peace. So I'm not saying it was the right thing, but I became a people pleaser very quickly, very early on in my life. Well, so the other thing I guess I was going to say is that I came out as gay, and I came out as gay right out of high school. And that was a level of my parents, my mom and my stepdad, they did not handle that well. They were small town Nebraska. My dad and my stepmom, who were very religious in Seattle, they didn't handle that very well. And there was a moment of like, they had put me through so much, and I was a young man, 17, 18. And I was like, and I was thinking of myself and my life and where I'm going. And then I had this moment of, I just don't care what they think. I don't care why they think that there's something wrong with me. And so even though I've always been kind of a more sensitive man, there was this moment where I was like, I cannot put what these people think of me in front of everything. And so I came out as gay when I was 18, shunned by some of my family, loved by the other ones, but I just had to be the authentic me. And so I'm also in Lincoln, Nebraska at that time, which is a small community, and making a name for myself. I met a person who, my boyfriend at the time, current husband, been 25 years ago. He pulled me to Omaha and said, I was in school to become a massage therapist because I thought it would soothe people. I had strong hands. I like to sit there and talk to people and just make them feel better. And I would rub their shoulders and I just soothe people. And I thought, I'm going to become a massage therapist. So then my partner at the time said, you've got this all wrong. You have a gift to help people and to manage their problems, their emotions, not rub their shoulders. And we were young, we were in college. And he said, you need to be a real estate agent. And I'm like, real estate, what are you talking about? And he said, and he was very smart. And he said, this is a business. It's all about guiding and helping people, managing their emotions. He understood the industry way before I had any idea what it was. And he's a smart man. He pushed me into it, and he was spot on. And again, this is before we were talking about emotions or firefighter or anything. The things that I learned as a child, the things that kind of morphed me, that helped me a people pleaser, the things that have created my personality are the things that have helped me become a really great realtor. Because I just want to help my clients. I just want to make sure that I am their firefighter. Like right now, this is July of 2022. The market's shifting a little bit. It's all over the country. It's a whole other conversation. But my firefighter is coming out like you wouldn't believe. I'm able to call my clients and say, hey, everything's going to be okay. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. Because I have just set these things into motion. And it's like my mind, I jump into action when there's a problem.
So Tim, if I can interrupt you there real quick.
Please.
So you've mentioned firefighter several times, and we talked about it right out of the gate. So we're part of this. We're part of this real estate community, as many of the guests have been. And one out of every 8 houses that are sold in America are sold by somebody in this group. But we've had these. They're called. It used to be called the Heritage Profile. Now it's called Real Strengths, and it's just a process we go through, or a behavior analysis, if you will, on how we communicate, or how we need to be communicate with, how we thrive, basically what our traits are, what our best attributes or strongest attributes are. So a firefighter, as you could pretty much see, is self-explanatory, is somebody that likes to solve problems, somebody that likes to help people, somebody that likes to find solutions to things. So you can hear Tim talking about that. He likes to figure it out and solve those problems. So I just wanted to make sure people understood that, Tim. But go
ahead.
Well,
I'm glad you clarified, though, because I know, and I'm sorry that I do this. I mean, it's become so ingrained in me that now I just talk about it like it's language that everybody else should understand. And I wish we all could understand ourselves in that way, to be honest, because once I learned, and you're right, I'm jumping ahead, but once I learned I was a firefighter and then leaning into that, it's okay. I mean, my job is to jump in and help people. That doesn't mean I have to do everything. It just means that I need to understand that that is my value. It's being a resource, being a helper, being the person that when there's a problem, I'm the calm room in the calm voice in the room. It's life-changing to understand who you are.
So Tim, when I guess one of the questions I have here is like, okay, some people see people pleasers as a bad thing or negative thing. In the firefighter world, can you be a good people pleaser?
I'm not there just to hold their hand, kiss their ass, and tell them everything is okay. I'm there to help them solve their problems. I'm there to be the calm voice in the room. I'm there to be the rational one. It's like just being the rock that they lean on, you know?
So it's almost pleasing them for the right reasons, not to say, hey, I want your attention or acknowledgement.
Yeah, I'm not placating. I don't want to placate anybody or patronize anybody. I'm not saying, oh, everything is fine when it's really not.
Right.
And I'm not even saying I have all the solutions. I'm just saying I'm the calm person that will help you rationalize and decide what the solution is or present the problem.
Good. Present the solution. So you said there was a moment. There was a moment in time when I said, you know, and I'll paraphrase, enough is enough. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Was there something that happened that made you think that way? Or did you just, you know, you were just dead tired of like being the old Tim?
I'm sorry. Are you talking about when I decided, not when I came out as gay, you're talking about when I decided that I was a firefighter?
Yes, exactly. When you decided you were a firefighter.
Realizing that I'm a firefighter is exactly your podcast. It's the chiseled. It's that it's taken me years. I'm telling you, I've been talking about my firefighter attribute for years. And even just 2 weeks ago, having a one-on-one conversation with my coach, with Dave McGee, by the way, brilliant man. He honed in on my attributes, and he was able to pinpoint. It's constantly getting better. I mean, he taught me that while the market was just going through its own little weirdness, why I'm not nervous and why I'm looking forward to help. And I'm constantly getting better and loving every moment of it.
You know, I'm sitting here giggling a little bit because it's kind of funny. You know, I watch one of my shows that I'm watching right now, that's called Chicago Fire. And you know, it's a bunch of firefighters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and of course it's television and Hollywood. I get all that. But the point is, you know, even though a fire is a negative thing, I think firefighters, you know, they want to go into the fire. They want to get into it, right? They want to put it out. They want to save people. And that's where I hear you are. And so this little fire is brewing right now, if you want to look at it that way, that the market's settling down. It's not and this is kind of what a paradox or like an opposite of a pun. Like it's not as hot as it was.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some issues coming up now, and you being calm because that's who you are in the firefighter that you are. It's like you almost welcome this. Is that right?
Yes. Because I'm looking forward to being needed.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to somebody saying, "Tim, come and save the day." And I never thought that was true or accurate until I realized who I was. I mean, once I realized who I was, the more I embraced it, and the more I lean into it, the more I'm okay with it. And the more I know that people call me because they know I'm a calm voice and I'm their problem solver. So where all that landed is honestly, I became an adult. I moved to Omaha, Nebraska. John, my current husband, pulled me to Omaha. I didn't know a soul here. I knew nobody. And I was 25 years old. I was ready to fight. I was ready to become something. And I realized that I needed to hit the ground and start meeting people. Because I knew that even though I was a brand new realtor, 25 years old, I needed people to meet me. I needed people to refer me. I needed to get out in the community. So I really hit the ground hard. I started talking to businesses. I started talking to people. I started talking about, hey, if you know a realtor, I know this is not a realtor podcast, but that's what I do. If you need somebody looking to buy or sell, I would love to be your realtor. So I just kind of grew that. And I grew that just very authentically. And I say all this because also I was new to Omaha and I had come from this baggage childhood of being shunned and pushed away and, you know, my disowned, to be honest, for being gay, that I was like, screw it. So I was openly gay. I advertised in the newspaper, the gay newspaper. They had parades here. I did everything I can. And my broker at the beginning, they said no. They said, no, you can't do that. And I'm like, why? And they were like, well, you know, all there are different reasons. They did come around full circle and allow me to be in the booths and events and everything. But I was just trying to be authentic. I just didn't. And I felt like I was being pulled down the whole time. So I was like, I mean, I wore a baseball cap. I had an eyebrow piercing. I had all my own little look. And I was just, and all the other realtors in my market were, you know, wearing a suit. You know, they had their picture of the business card with them holding the brick phone, because this was 1996, 1997 we're talking about.
Yeah, so you can imagine
what I'm talking about. So I just wanted to push through. So basically, I did well in Omaha very, very early on. I was very charismatic, very outgoing. I did very, very well working by referral and relationship. Then I started a team in about 2008, when the market, this is where we're starting to talk about what we've done. So in 2008, I met a business partner, a friend of yours, Carol Sousa. Yes. She's in our market. She's a good friend. Her and I teamed up. There's so much more behind that. But her and I teamed up to start a team in Omaha. And our team was called the Good Life Group. It was all about relationship marketing. It was all about taking care of your clients and being there. And by the way, she's a gardener, and hers is all about gardening. She's a beautiful gardener. That's her attribute. Pardon me. not what she does for a living. It's the attribute. She plants seeds and she gardens and she sows emotions, and she's a good coach. I'm a firefighter. The two of us just hit it off. So we started a team and we focused on relationship marketing. By the way, I'm saying this also because this was in 2008. The market was crashing across the country by most realtor standards. We exploded. And the reason we exploded is because we kept our heads down. We were focusing on relationships. We were focusing on the people we knew. We were focusing on being our authentic self. We were not advertising online. We did really, really well. Now, a few years into it, Carol went a different way. She became one of the managing brokers of a company, and I kept managing the team. So I did this. I love to specialize in old and historic homes. That was something I always wanted to do. So in about 2015-16, I had taken the team that I had grown to be very large. It had been, at the time, 19 people. We had our own office. We were all about relationship marketing. We were all about taking care of your clients. And even the front of the building had a Zig Ziglar quote across the front. If you care about everybody, what they want, it'll come back to you. Whatever the quote was, it was across the front of the building.
And let me just clarify real quick, Tim.
Please, I'll let you say it. What is it?
So Zig Ziglar says, if you help enough other people get what they want, you'll always get what you want. So that's the quote from Zig Ziglar.
It just meant so much to us. And so we I'm telling you, my team, the Good Life Group, we really resonated with a lot of people because they knew it was run by an authentically open gay guy. And even though I had my team, which again turned into 19 people, was extremely diverse. We had two very, very far right-wing Christian women who, and at the same time, very far left-wing people who were different than me. My team was not about a politics or anything. It was about our clients, and we were there for the same reason. And we all had the same purpose and emotions in mind, and we recognized that we didn't vote the same way and that we didn't go to pray the same way, but we were still close friends. And growing the team to what we did was extraordinary. We were very proud of it. We basically had our own office. We had our own location. We had our own team manager, photographer, stager. I mean, we were a fully formed brokerage running as a team under another brokerage. So I partnered in 2016 with another bubbling little brokerage in our city to become Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, the Good Life. So we're no longer a team, we're a company. And I'm so proud of this. And this is why I'm talking about it. This is why I feel like I'm here, is because we opened this company with the right mission and purpose in mind. We were not looking to just grow it for the sake of growing it. We were not looking to bring on agents that for the sake of it, of growing it. We wanted to be kind, competent, like-minded people. So one of the blessings that – well, first of all, the day we opened as Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, the Good Life Group, we were number five in our market. So like we're a brokerage. So like poof, we're on the map. We're big. And we started getting inundated with agents that were like coming to us saying, you're doing something special. What are you doing? And they wanted to come to us. And so one particular person came over, and this person was not somebody we would put our name to, and they really wanted to join us. And we thought it through, and we had a discussion, and we said, we are not here just to be a company for the sake of a company. We're not looking to grow. We want to have a litmus test as to why somebody is here. So we turned that person down. And as you can imagine, they went back to their brokerage and complained and said, oh my gosh, that company is terrible. They wouldn't hire me. Well, people heard that. And they were like, well, we wouldn't hire you either. So that person helped us become invitation only from the very beginning. And what that really meant was that not just anybody can come here. We gotta be here for the same reasons. And we gotta be here because we're kind, competent, positive. We're here because we wanna help each other out. And I say that, so now we are 300 agents. We're number two in our market.
Wow.
We have six offices.
That's where you are today, right? Right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, good for you, yeah. Man. That's great.
Yeah. 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 It's pretty impressive. And but also we don't recruit. We turn, I would say, maybe half the people that come to us down. And it's not a matter of production. It's a matter of why they're in the business, why are they here? We have to talk to them and see what is their long-term vision. When somebody calls me and says, hey, I hear you have a good brokerage, I'm looking to hang my license. Well, my initial reaction is, wait a minute, you just said the word hang my license, which gives me shivers. But like, why are you here? What is your purpose in real estate? And that don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with a stay-at-home mom that just wants to sell three or four houses a year. Nothing wrong with that. It's that you're clear about that. It's that you're clear that that's why you're here. That's what your goal is. We don't want people at our brokerage that are lost. We want them to hear for a defined reason. They're here because this real estate is their passion. They're here because real estate is their side. We also want to make sure that we know that something like 85% of the people that get in the business get out within the first 5 years. We don't want that to happen here. So we haven't recruited new agents. We've strictly focused on, if we take care of the people that are here, the retention of the agents that are here, they will not only take care of our culture, they will become walking, talking billboards to recruit the agents that we want. So we don't recruit at all. We just let the people come to us. We talk to them. We see whether or not they want to be here. And we do that. And the reason this comes back full circle to me is because, by the way, I'm co-broker. Tom, my business partner, him and Leslie do the bulk heavy lifting of the brokerage. I knew what I was doing. I wanted to do right this. I wanted to be the cheerleader. I wanted to be the smiling face. I still want to be on the street selling houses. I want to talk to our agents and be their mentor and talk to them and give them advice. But I want to be in on the ground selling houses with them. So I partner with other people that can do the heavy lifting while I can be out there with everybody else.
Go ahead. Now, I'm just going to jump in. So real quick, so to go back, you said kind, caring, but what's the mission? What's your mission? What's the company mission? What's the company purpose?
Well, our Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate Good Life Group, we do have core values, and it's called PAGE, passion, authenticity, inclusion, growth, and excellence. Those are five core values that we truly hold very dearly. We think of those when we're taught, they're not just buzzwords. As a matter of fact, one time I was recruiting somebody, a good producing realtor. And I talked about our core values and I talked about them passionately, which I'm about to do in a movie, for a few minutes. And when I was done, he said to me, he goes, yeah, that's all good. But at the end of the day, we all just want to sell houses and make money. And I said, no, it's not the, I mean, that's number two. Number two, one is that we're here to help people and to be their confidant and to be the person that they rely on. You have to put everybody else first before yourself. Anyway, passion. You have to be here for the right reason. We want to make sure that you're a part of our organization because you're passionate about it. And that goes back to why you're here. It doesn't mean you have to sell 100 houses a year, but you have to truly believe in what you do. I don't want to be anybody being half-ass while they're here. Authentic, that goes back to me being a new young gay agent with my eyebrow piercing and my broker telling me I couldn't advertise to gay people because they thought it was tacky. And I'm like, I was just me. I was just trying to market to my people. Inclusion. Our company has done a very good job. When they first started this, the I stood for innovation. And they changed it after a few years because any brokerage at our level should be innovative. And they changed it to inclusion because inclusion really is not diversity. It means we are open to all people and all ideas. We're open. Always leaving your mind and your heart open is what inclusion is. And it's extremely important in all of your life, especially in real estate. Growth, we have to always be moving forward and try to get a little bit better and to make money and to make money together. And then, of course, excellence. Everything we do is high quality at the top of it. But I say that all because kind, competent, and positive. Those are the three extra layers that we, our local brokerage, added to Better Homes and Gardens PAGE. PAGE is Better Homes and Gardens. It's wonderful. It's what they created. It's our core values. It's our mission statement. But locally, kind, competent, and positive. In the Midwest, we're a little bit different. How people talk to each other, how people communicate with each other. We're not cutthroat. And if you're not kind, we don't want you.
Right.
Being kind is an extremely important attribute. Positive. The last realtor I had to let go, which I don't do that often. I don't want to do that. It was over their negativity. They couldn't stop being negative. Everything. We can't surround ourselves around people that are negative. And I just can't.
So that was a lot there, Tim. It was a heck of a lot there. So good stuff. So I got to ask this question. So, I mean, it was a rough upbringing and now you're having a lot of success. So looking back, where did God play a role in all this? Can you share that?
That's a good question. And thank you for bringing that up. Because what I didn't share with you is, I said it a little bit, is, part of the problem I had is when I was growing up, when I first started growing up, my family was very religious. And for a variety of reasons, they came and went from the church. But I was shunned as a child for being gay, as a young man for being gay. And religion was the excuse. And so I will say me, as well as so many other people, gay people, I should say, grew up resentful because we felt like we were being pushed away from the religion, being pushed away from God, because people say that God doesn't want us. And it was not a good experience. So even as an adult, I end up finding myself agnostic. I found myself not really knowing. I found myself pushing back. The reality is I am spiritual. I do believe there's a God. I have no idea what that is. I have no idea. I don't think you're right. I don't think the next guy's right. I don't think anybody's right. I'm not right. None of us are right. But I know it's there. So we all feel it.
So that it thing is a higher power, you might say?
It's a higher power.
Right. I call it God.
It's exactly, you call it God, somebody calls it this, somebody calls it that. I believe it's there, but I don't think any one of us are right in what it is.
So is there a part of Tim that wants to dig into that a little deeper?
No.
Okay. And is it, do you not want to dig into it because is there a reason? Let me ask you, is there a reason?
I will. Because I believe that, and I will, for the purposes of this conversation, I'll say God. Because I think God put
Don't be a people pleaser for me.
No. Because I think
I had you open the door for me. I had to walk in.
Well, the truth is that yes, I would refer to it as God. Okay. And because that is, I mean, that's what we all agree to. It's just more me painting the picture that I don't think it's whatever it is. I don't think it's. I think we're all wrong. The truth, I think. Oh, what was your question? Now I forgot.
Why don't you want to dig into it a little more?
Oh. Because I don't think he put us on this earth to, I think he would rather I go explore me. I think he would rather I spend my time focusing on me and the little bit of life I got left here to become a better person than for me to be worrying or worshiping or praying to him. He wants me to explore this earth, not him.
Yeah. But do you think he wants you to be even better you?
Yes. And to spend my time on that.
So in spending your time on that, do you feel like he's going to constantly or continue to chisel away at you?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I think that is my version of how I want to honor God, is to continue to get better.
Mm-hmm. So what's the chisel, that's coming at Tim? Is it going to be more challenges along the way? Is it going to be, another tragedy or whatever? Who knows? What do you see the chiseling being for Tim Reeder?
You know, it's appreciating what I have already, continuing to get a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better every day, absolutely never stopping. I think I listened to that on a podcast of yours today. never, ever, ever stopping, and just continuing to improve yourself. And I think God wants us to improve ourselves. I think God would rather us spend time exploring, improving ourselves and the people around us than worrying about whether or not he thinks that we're worshiping him. Because this isn't about God. This is about us. He put us here for a reason. He put us here to impact and improve each other's lives. He put us here to help each other. And it's why you can't deny it. When you help somebody else, it comes back tenfold.
Let me ask you this question though. Yeah. So in helping others and being the best you and doing something kind and caring for somebody else, don't you feel like that's a way of worshiping God?
Yes. That's exactly what I think.
So then do you think he does want us to worship him?
I think it's possible. I think it's possible. And that way, I guess I mean to say that way and not sitting on my knees in the church.
Well, I mean, that depends who you are. You know,
I agree.
I think there's several ways to do it. You're not, and I'm a guy that I think I'm worshiping God through my acts and through helping people, inspiring people, but I'm also worshiping through prayer. So it's, you know, everybody, we're all different, but that's why this is such a good, I'm so glad we're talking right now, because it's that we don't have to agree on everything, right?
So I think I do agree with you. I mean, I think you're totally right. And I think to further-
But you just told me I was wrong. You said everybody was wrong.
I should say nobody is fully right. Nobody is fully right. But I think that we find joy in God. We find worship in God. We find experiencing God's love in enjoying the life we have, improving the life we have. So one of the reasons, let's just go back for a moment. You asked me, you and I bumped together in a conference in May.
Right.
And you said, hey, Tim, let's talk about being on the podcast. Because the reason you said that is because you had seen that I had lost 50 pounds in like 6 months. Yeah. And so then you were like, well, that's, you know, big. Wow, that's a really big deal. How'd you do that? Well, let me talk. I think there's a little bit of God in there. So what it was is it was in October. I decided I was going to turn 50 in March. And I thought, well, you know, I would really like to lose 20 pounds. And so I just started to focus on, I mean, I did cut back on drinking alcohol. I cut back on all sorts of stuff, but I started to like focus on it. So then I started going to the gym, and on my drive home, I started really focusing on how good I felt at the gym, how great that workout was, how my cardiovascular system felt. It was like from the gym to my home is one song, what would be 4 minutes. And I would roll the windows down and I started feeling incredible. And I started to focus on how good I felt. And then I started focusing on how good my day was, how good everything was just working. And without even putting any energy or thought into it, within about a week, I started to wake up and crave that. Yes, endorphins. Yes, energy. But I started to crave that. That was 6 months ago. It has not stopped. Every single morning, I just get up. I have not used an alarm clock since October because my mind, I just get up at 5:36, somewhere in that ready. I'm ready to get to the gym. I'm ready for the energy. And I'm not saying I'm ready for the rush or the adrenaline. Yeah, that's all good. But I just feel so good. And that just fed upon itself. And I lost 50 pounds just focusing on how good I felt at that.
So I got two questions for you, or two things here for you. First question is, where's that energy? Where do you feel that energy is coming from?
Somewhere deep inside that even I haven't quite figured out. Mm-hmm. Yes, I see you look on your face there, Robert.
I believe the energy comes from God. I do. That's my opinion.
I think you very well could be right.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it. And the other thing I want to just clear up, you know, and the irony of what you said before about, you know, hey, you lost 50 pounds and you thought, hey, let's be on chiseled, because this is not about being physically chiseled, right? Right. And yeah, I looked at him like, holy cow, man, that guy made a change. And so it wasn't about the physical chiseling. It was like, where was Tim's mindset? What happened that he said, you know, bang, it's time for me to make a change. And you did. And you did. And man, it takes a lot of work to lose the weight you lost. Right. Would you? I'm sure it does.
Oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. And just control myself and to stopping at the gas station every day on my way home and picking up a 6-pack of beer. I got into a habit of doing that 6-pack of beer. And that was it. Just a 6-pack. And I wouldn't even drink it all every day. But I got into a bad habit. So that. I had that, and then I had this energy, and they fed upon each other, and they gave me a level of energy that was far more. By the way, I drink beer now. I've been drinking beer for a long time. I don't drink nearly as much as I used to, but it's not like that. It's just that I controlled my mind. I controlled what I needed. I controlled what I.
You managed it.
I managed. Yeah, because it was never out of control, but I managed how I felt. And then I started to lean into the energy that I was given by the working out and by God.
Yeah. I'm not forcing you to say that, but that's what I believe. Hey, look, Tim, before we wrap this up, when we had a previous conversation, I want you to hit on this. It is one of our last pieces here. We were talking, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, whatever it was, maybe a month ago. And you made a comment about you wanted to be more of you to help others to be more of themselves, which in a sense helped you be even more of you. Yeah. Do you remember that conversation? And so let me repeat it. So you said, I want to be more of me to help others be more of them, which in turn helps me be more of me again. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I don't remember exactly where my mind was when I said that at that moment, but I will say in life, the more people reach out to you for help and the more you help them, the more it feeds, not only do you help them, the more it feeds you, the more, and I'm not talking helping like giving them money. I'm talking about helping them with energy, help checking in with them, texting them, being their friend, whatever it is they need. It comes back to you tenfold. It always does. And it makes you feel stronger. So I think what I meant by then, that is the more I started to realize that firefighter attribute, that the more I help, the more I receive, that the more I leaned into it. And the more it changed me.
And the more you're able to help others be more.
And it doesn't stop. It's a train that just keeps getting bigger and bigger. But then the firefighter in you, by the way, for anybody out there who might be a firefighter, one of your biggest issues is if you get bored, or if you get stressed, or you get frustrated, you can start to start fires, which means you start to create problems that I don't understand that yet. Still working with my coach on it. But you create fires and problems so that you have to put them out, and they take your time and your energy. And why? I'm still working on that. Why do I create fires?
Yeah, it's just a form of self-sabotaging, right?
It is.
We don't even know it.
It is.
So I guess the point I brought it up because I'm thinking, you know, this whole chiseled concept, this whole personal growth and development, or you know, whatever you want to call it, this whole journey, you know, the more we become more of ourselves, the more we're able to help others. And in helping others, they are helping us in return.
That is, and that's what we're saying. The more you help them, it feeds right back to you. You grow. Yeah. You grow just as much. Yeah.
So Tim, you've been awesome here. You've been really awesome. Look, I'm glad we bartered back and forth. Not bartered, we bantered. Back and forth here. And you've been very authentic in sharing your story, and I'm really appreciative of that. If somebody wanted to get a hold of Tim Reeder and learn more about him and get to know him better here, maybe even do real estate in Omaha, Nebraska, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, my primary website is oldomaha.com. That is, I'm obsessed with old homes, everything old homes. So go to oldomaha.com and it has everything about that. I know it's my business page. However, since you gave me this platform, I am working on kicking off a new website called timstown.com. And if anybody wants to go there, I would go to that. So basically, I specialize in old historic homes. And so I'm creating at the very fair start, a website that is Omaha's history, where I'm posting blueprints, blogs, pictures, history, and then my clients or the public can contribute theirs as well. So it's a map of the city of Omaha where we're kind of filling in all the historic content. So if I would ask you to go to a website first, I would ask you to go to timstown.com.
Awesome. Is there an email address that people get a hold of you?
Oh, tim.reeder@betteromaha.com.
Awesome, Tim. Look, I am so appreciative of you. It was great to see you when I saw you in May, and I see you on the screen right now. Yep. And thank you for sharing. I'm sure you inspired somebody today and you helped somebody, and that's what this is all about. So thank you so much. And until next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pondari. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than Equal.